Hello, listeners. Welcome to a new episode of The Blue Radio. Today, we will be hearing Jennifer's story. Jennifer is a survivor of incest, and she's also one of the most resilient people I know. So, this story involves mentions of sexual abuse, and if this topic triggers you, please listen with a trusted friend or professional. Without further ado, let's hear Jennifer's story.
Well, my childhood was like, I think, like the most terrible childhood that you can imagine. It was like I survived incest. So for 13 years, I was a victim. And that was my grandfather. He was the predator. But my mother, it was her father. So, but she knew. She took me to him every time and then just left me behind for weeks on end. I had to go on vacation to have a really fun time herself. And later on when I tried to tell people about it, other people, to get some help, like the neighbors, she immediately went to the neighbors and told them that I was just a crazy, stupid child and should never be taken seriously because I had an overactive imagination. And she just killed my character and nobody took it seriously. Nobody ever even called child services or the police, nothing. So I just feel really betrayed by her, but also by the people that they just said like, oh, well, it's the mother. She's saying it doesn't happen, so it doesn't happen. I mean, come on, she was in on it. She was the facilitator. So it's really bad. And he was sadistic also. So he used to beat me a lot, hit me over the head with iron objects and his clogs. And he was a farmer. And also he would torture.
Yes. Sorry. So how old were you when these things were happening?
It was from 0 to 13 years old. So it was 13 years in a row. And people think that babies don't have this, but I can tell you, I remember stuff from 6 months old. So and as a baby, you know, it's wrong because you feel like really terrible. So it lasted 13 years. And my father, he was an alcoholic. And he was always at work, workaholic, alcoholic, and used to chase after women. So he just wasn't paying attention. And he was really, like, if I tried to tell him, because I even tried to tell him, he was just shouting at me to be quiet and behave and not be this, you know, children are not to be heard, only seen, blah, blah, blah. So there was no safe place for me. I couldn't find anyone to help me. And so I was all alone in this situation. And and my grandfather, he also tortured the animals on his farm to keep me quiet. Because I was still a fighter. I'm still, to this day, I'm a fighter. I fought back. I bit his hand and stuff and I kicked his leg. But still, you know, I couldn't get away because I was a little kid. But he just said, look, this, you see what I'm doing with the animals? If you tell anybody about our little secret, he's a little secret, then this will happen to your brothers. So yeah, that was a good way to shut me up. Being scared and frightened and anxious and lonely and
When you were growing up, you noticed that you told me that you had very bad feeling. And so did you think that everybody grows up with such a bad feeling and everybody's families are like that? Or did you notice that something in your life was abnormal or worse than your friends or relatives' lives?
Yeah, I knew it was really, really, really wrong. I could tell even by how I saw his face change. you know, when he was doing these acts, brutal acts, I saw his face change into something like really evil. I could see like evil in his eyes, and that just scared the crap out of me even more. And that I knew that is not normal. People are not supposed to turn into something evil. And also my friends, you know, I didn't talk to them about it, but I noticed their behavior with their parents, and that their parents were loving to them and supportive and, you know, cared. So I could feel so clearly the difference between their lives and mine. And I was so lonely, and I just wanted to tell everybody all the time. But yeah, my mother just like forced me to be quiet. So really, really bad. It's a lie. It's a lie.
I'm very sorry to hear that.
Thank you.
It must have been horrible. So I know this must be a bit of a sensitive question, but did your mother or any of your abusers ever tell you that why this was happening to you? Did you like, or did you wonder this? Because
No. Till this very day, my mother denies everything. She still says to this day that it didn't happen and that I'm just crazy, panic mongering, a fantasy girl, you know, who likes to make trouble for everybody, and that people shouldn't listen to me. So to this day, she's just like, I'm such a good mother and I do everything for my children. And well, she did nothing, except, you know, scare the crap out of me and oppress me and force me to keep this secret. So, yeah, and my grandfather, he's dead now, thankfully. But no, I never talked about it because he was doing it, you know. But even the grandmother, his wife, she knew. My mother knew, she knew, the women knew. And nobody did anything to him. Nothing.
That's really bad. I mean, you were innocent. Yeah. You were just an innocent child, and no child, adult, or anybody in this world deserves to be treated like that. I'm very sorry.
No. Thank you. It's the first time somebody says that to me. So yeah, thank you.
So, how did this impact you growing up? Like, how did it impact your social life or you're at school? You know, if you describe yourself growing up and how you thought that this had impacted you in this process.
Well, maybe I should explain a little bit first, because when I was 13, my mother went on the search. And she started talking during surgery that my grandfather had also sexually molested her and her sisters. So, but it was also me and my cousins. So it's like the whole generation, two generations. But because her case was old, nothing was done. The police didn't do anything. And again, I tried to tell me too. But it wasn't taken seriously, so nothing happened to him again. And that just made my mind go like, broke my mind. I was like under chronic stress for 13 years. And yeah, that just killed my mind. And I just, I went into amnesia. I don't know if you know what that is, but suddenly, yeah, I passed out, fell to the floor. And when I woke up, everything up until that moment was gone. It was like one big black void. So I didn't remember anything, only the feeling of being really scared and unhappy and just numb and like alienated from the world. It was a really strange, dark place. It wasn't like happy. Oh, I forgot everything. Now you're happy. Now it was like dark weirdness, like something is wrong with me, but I don't know what. And that's a weird, you know, like really strange feelings. And that's how I went from 13 to 16 years old. But my mother was still like daily putting me down, screaming at me, telling me I was crazy. And so at 16, I escaped. I went to the United States. I thought, I'm going as far away as I can from this crazy family. And I went to the USA for a year, and there, for the first time, I blossomed. I found friends. I had a good time in school. School was so amazing, and people cared. And I just, you know, I just excelled. Yeah, I excelled, like in dancing and singing, and in my grades, and went to the National Honor Society, and I went to New York with a masterclass of dance with Cat's choreographer. So suddenly I was like seen. People were like, I wasn't invisible anymore, you know? So I was so happy, and I never wanted to go back to my home, to the Netherlands, to my family. And I told them, like, at the end of the year, I said, look, I'm not coming back, bye. I'm happy for the first time ever. And then my mother went into this narcissistic rage, and she screamed at me for weeks and weeks and weeks on the phone that I had to come home. And I said, no, I'm not coming home. No, I found somebody. He wants to marry me. I'm almost 18. I'm staying. And then I stopped taking their calls. And then she just sent my brothers to the States, my little brothers, and told them to take me back home. And then they were there, and they were crying that they missed me, and that just broke me. And I went back home, and instantly I was neglected and shouted at again by her, and she was so happy because she had won, and now she was happy. And I just went into a depression, like deep depression, for about 9 months, where I just couldn't get out of bed. I just went into a how do you say this? In this like baby fetus position in bed.
Oh, yes, a fetal position.
Yeah. And I just couldn't move for 9 months, and just cried and cried and cried and cried. And nobody in my family came to comfort me or help me. They just ignored me for the 9 months. Like, hey, someday she'll stop crying and she'll come out of it, blah. So it was really, I had like found my happy place, literally. And she just had to destroy it. So I'm like, how mean a person is she to, you know, you don't want your child to be happy. If you do anything to kill her happiness, I mean, how sick in the head is she? So, yeah.
So you were the 16-year-old girl who could figure out her life in
the
country.
Yeah.
Honestly, and it's very difficult to do that. I'm an immigrant myself. So you could figure your life out as a 16-year-old girl, and then she just could not see that and wanted you to return to your home country. So you mentioned amnesia when you were 13. So when did you start remembering?
After I came out of the depression, my brother's best friend. He was, he wanted a relationship with me, which of course turned out to be a dysfunctional, violent relationship because, you know, that's all I knew. So, I just was really, and at one point he started beating me and everything. So I was just really like at the end of my wits. Yeah. And I thought, I need help. And nobody's helping me. I need psychological help. So I went to a therapist. And with her help, it took about a year after talking therapy, like blah, blah, blah talking. And then she gave me art therapy where I was drawing because we got stuck. And because of the drawings, it all came out. And then it just all came back, like rushing back, like in one. And I remembered all the memories came back, and I was sick, and I just vomited on the floor there. And then I was just shaking, and she gave me tea with sugar to calm me down and blankets. And yeah, and then we just talked more about that, and she tried to help me as much as she could with the memories and feelings and stuff. So thanks to her, I remembered. So, but the moment it all came back, it was like the floodgates went open, like the dam broke, and everything like rushed back all at once. Really strange.
Yes, it must have been terrible to remember all of that bad things all at once.
Yeah, so, like all at once. So it was like it wasn't even enough one time. I had to relive it again. Yeah, so.
Yeah. I'm so sorry. I'm really, this is.
Thank you.
You're very strong too, actually. Have survived this and now have the courage to talk about it and inform other people that this
Thank
is not okay. If they're being impacted, they can speak up and, well. When you did reach adulthood, you were going to therapy and you were going through a healing process. So
yeah.
As an adult, how did this impact your relationships or decisions?
I went, I think maybe when I was 19 or 20, and I was still living at home with them, and my parents were getting a divorce, and they were screaming every day and objects thrown through the house and like really chaos, and my boyfriend was beating me, and I was like, oh, I have to escape and I can't go to America because she will find me again. So I just thought I just have to go somewhere where nobody can find me and just go. So one day I just had like 10 euros and a t-shirt and a toothbrush and little, you know, like little change of clothes in my plastic bag. And I just went on the train and left. And I went to Amsterdam. And I was just like, I'm going, nothing can be worse than this. Whatever happens cannot be worse than this. And it was the first time I went on faith. Like I was like praying in the train. And I was like, God, help me, because I cannot do this. I cannot. On my own, it's too much. I need help and I need it now. And I came out of the train in Amsterdam and I felt like kissing the gods, like I'm home, you know, really strange. But I just walked out of the train and the sun was shining and everybody was happy. And I found friends like in that same day and I could stay with them and I was safe and I was being looked after. And I could heal, my body could heal, my brain could heal. Yeah, it was like the America again. I just have to be away from them and then I can be myself, you know, and heal. So I healed in the beginning of Amsterdam. I now live here like 35 years or something. Yeah, something like that. So yeah, but then I found that my ex, he just found me again somehow in Amsterdam and he crawled back into my life. And I only wanted to be away from him because I had enough of beatings and being scared and stuff. But somehow he was like a snake and he found me again and he was stopping me from having like real relationships with other people. So it was like my past was again. Like trying to like get me back or something. It was really scary. So I had to escape him again. It's like my life is all about escaping. But I did. I escaped him too. And then I found a really, really good man. And he was just the best man ever. And I married him. Yeah.
Well, that's great to hear. I'm very happy that you found a good relationship between that.
So, yeah, thank you.
So do you think that this experience of yours has impacted your personality as who you are as an adult in this day, if you were to judge? And how do you think that has been?
It's very clear because now I'm already a widow. So he died, a good man died, and that just took me like, thank you. It just took me right back to, you know, now I'm alone again. And I can tell I have very much difficulties with having friends. You know, I just don't trust people as, you know, as a rule, just don't trust them. So I find it really hard because I have a best friend for 30 years. She knew me from back then and she's like the only one that I trust, but normally I notice I tend to be alone. I tend to lock myself in the house and be like a nun, you know, like in a convent, just no interaction with people anymore. And yeah, it's hard. It's hard. I'm in therapy again now, because I stopped seeing my family altogether. I had before, of course, when I escaped Amsterdam, I didn't see them for 13 years, but yeah, again, they kind of creeped back in. But now, 2 years ago, I said, I'm done with you, with the whole family. I want no one ever, ever, ever back in my life again, ever. And now I'm finally able to go to therapy and go really deep, you know, get all the inner stuff, because it's like an onion. There's new layers of terrible, terribleness. So I'm like now getting to the core of it. And yeah, it's hard.
So you would say in your process of healing that you are very bravely continuing right now. Therapy was one of the things that played a major role. So what other things played a role in you healing?
My husband, really. Yeah. He was like, I always say, one man took everything away from me and one man gave it all back. And that's what he did. He just gave me true love from like the first second to the last second. And we were just like, everybody who saw us was like, you're so beautiful together. It's like you have this light shining up you, and we were always just holding hands and smiling at each other and being happy. And yeah, he just made me realize that not all men are bad. Because that was also my thought, like all men are bad, but it's not all men, it's some men. And yeah, and also he just, yeah, I don't know, can I talk about sex here or not? Is that?
Yes, you can.
Okay. Yeah, good. Because I just couldn't have sex, you know. I was so like, it was just really nasty to me. And my body didn't feel like my body. It was just something that men used for their pleasure. And, you know, it wasn't mine. And he was just so beautiful and gentle. And he just made me relax. And it was like when I had sex with him, it was like coming home. And yeah, he just gave that all back to me. Like, it's your body and you decide at any second what you will allow and what you won't allow. And it's yours, you know. So yeah, he was beautiful.
I'm so happy that you actually had such great person in your life. I'm sorry that he passed away.
Yeah.
So my last question would be, if you were to say something to your childhood self, or I will expand it to anybody who's going through an experience like yours, what would you say?
First of all, only because nobody listened to me doesn't mean nobody will listen to you. Just tell somebody, go to a teacher, a doctor, a policeman, in somebody in a hospital, anybody, go to an adult and tell them. And also I want to say to all the adults out there, pay attention, because it was so clear. I was having I was having nightmares and walking, sleepwalking? I was sleepwalking. I was walking in the streets at night when I was 13. I mean, I knocked at people's doors. So people, pay attention when a child of 13 is in her nightgown knocking at your door in the middle of the night. There is something wrong with this child, you know? So just pay attention. And also to parents, watch out for predators, because they look for children that they can hurt. It's a special kind of child. Because if you're loved by your parents and they pay attention to the children, they don't want those kids. They want the kids that they can easily grab and know that they won't tell anybody, because, you know, they're either being abused or neglected at home. So parents, pay attention to the children. And don't ever let a male adult be alone with your child. Never, ever, never, ever. Because, you know, they don't show their true face to the parents, but they show it to the child in that time. So don't let it happen. That's, yeah.
Thank you very much. These are the things that I have tried to tell during my podcast, and you summarized them so beautifully.
Thank you.
In the last section. So other than that, I have no further questions to ask. So if there's anything that you want to add, please do. And if not, I will end this interview.
Yeah, I just hope also for like people in, you know, like in the medical field, the hospitals, police and teachers, I do hope that they get some kind of training, because when I was a child, it just didn't exist. So even if they saw it, they didn't know what to do with it. So I think we need as a whole society to change and make people aware, but also tell them, you know, what to do, what signs to look out for. Because I can tell only by the tilt of a child's head, you know, when you look at the floor all the time, that they are abused, you know. So it's this kind of signs. And if the child is quiet, is not responsive, something is wrong. So, yeah, we just need as a whole society to pay more attention to the quiet children.
That's a great point. And actually, there is some change over here in the United States, and there is a fellowship about childhood abuse in pediatrics, but that's definitely not enough. Other people in the field need to receive training so they can notice. Yes.
Exactly. Yep. Couldn't agree more. And also in child services, you know, they also need like special training, because of course the parents will act like, oh, it's all fine here, you know, la la la, nothing is wrong. So don't ever believe the parents, believe the children. That's my last point. Believe the children.
We have now reached the end of this episode. Thank you for listening, and stay tuned for more episodes of the Blue Radio Stories of Child Abuse Survivors.